Live from Los Angeles, it's the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guest, actress and playwright, Dina Morrone.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky.
And musical guest, Joe Lopiccolo. I am Mark Legere, and now your host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
I did something this weekend that I normally never take the time to do. I get invited to, occasionally actually, sit-down dinners. And normally, if it's a party, which I don't do a lot of anyway, but if it's a party, you know, you can go in, you can leave and all that. But if it's a sit-down dinner, you're there for the entire evening, and usually dinner is late and all of that stuff. So for some reason, I said yes. And there I was at this dinner party. And all of a sudden, I'm overwhelmed with an understanding of something that I had never really put together. So part of the conversation was this one couple was talking about how they had to get rid of their big house because who needs all that space? And now that we're older, et cetera, et cetera. Another couple was talking about, well, we used to collect things and we thought we need, you know, the china, the this, the that, and who needs all that this wear and that wear, and who gives parties like that anyways? And then another couple was, and almost everybody had a story of, but that's the way we were taught. And so I thought, wow, all of that wasted time and energy and money and having to work for these things and pick them out for just a handful of years that they were in the curio or on the credenza or for that one dinner party or that one Christmas that the whole family came, and mother always said you had to have this, otherwise you're not the right this, or dad always said, you know, you got to have a wine bar stocked or otherwise whatever it is, or a liquor bar, all of these things that the culture said we had to do, or that the family said, or that the whatever, that the tradition said we had to do. And we put all that energy into, we have to have a house like this, you have to have a guest room because you have to have a living room and the living room, all of these things. And then it seems like a decade or two, because some of these people weren't really that old, but a decade or two later, now all of a sudden they're realizing that all of this is wasted. All of this isn't used. And they now they're selling this stuff or trying to get rid of it, and nobody wants it. And that was the other part. Nobody wants it. They said, the kids today, they don't want it. Our kids don't want it. They laugh at us. They say, why do you have it? And I think, well, wait a minute. It's not just the things that we were told we needed to acquire and have, and otherwise we're not. It's also the mentality. It's also the way we think about things and the way we feel about things and the way we think about ourselves. Some of that we took on, and for years we've been carrying it along. And maybe it's time to let go of that too, along with some of the dishes and along with some of the... Dina's smiling at me. I'm going to stop because now she's nodding her... Yeah, and now she's shaking. Okay, I'm going to stop because she's going to have so much to say about this as we talk about pushing the envelope of cultural traditions. This is right up her alley with Dina Morrone when we come back, and a little later on, live music in the studio with Joe Lopiccolo, all on the Life Changes Show when we come back after this.
You are listening to the Life Changes Show, recorded live from Studio NoHo. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as Marianne Williamson, Gary Anthony Williams, Sierra Campbell, and Alan Roderick Jones, on our archive page at lifechangesshow.com. You can visit us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We are back. I'm Filippo Voltaggio, sitting here with Mark Legere. And Mark, I know you too have much to say on this topic.
You brought up all sorts of experiences. But I was wondering if any of those sit-down dinners had anything to do with chicken and waffles.
Oh, no. No, actually, that was the next. But nice, thank you.
But you know what? The phrase a phrase came up when you were talking about traditions, and I thought of program repeat.
Mm.
And you know how we talk about, you know, our self-operating system and how, you know, this programming as you're a child from your experiences.
Yeah.
And that's what these traditions are. You repeat the program unless you make a conscious effort to experience something different. But boy, yeah, you brought up all sorts of fond memories.
Sorry, but that's what it's about. And so we're pushing the envelope of cultural traditions, and a perfect person to do this with is our guest tonight, who is an actress, a playwright, a voiceover artist, and someone who pushes the envelope. And we'll talk about how in just a moment with our guest, Dina Morrone. Pleasure to have you with us. Welcome.
Thank you. I am thrilled to be here. Thank you, Filippo. And I have to say something about the dishes before
yes?
I say anything else. So back in the day when the Italian immigrants, you know, went to Canada, they had to, you know, they got their nice little house, and then they would go to showers and weddings and parties, and they'd go visit someone, and they would go to the china store. And there were these beautiful china stores that had all the fine bone china and the little ceramics and the ladros and all these little things, mm-hmm. knick-knack things. And mm-hmm. these ladies would go and buy them for other ladies mm-hmm. for their shower or their, you know, whatever party. And
housewarming or birthdays.
Housewarming.
Communion, all
and these stuff. Cups were like fine bone china, and they cost a lot of money. So you were what you said about working hard for this stuff,
mm-hmm.
and they collected this stuff. Well, now all these years later, there are boxes and boxes yeah. of this stuff because no one uses it. They shop at stores where they don't, you know, they don't have to worry about that. So my mother had a box. We were in a. All these stores are gone now. They don't. There isn't even a store in my hometown that sells fine bone china at all. There isn't anything like that. So the one guy who had a store sized down to, and he just had a little jewelry store. So I went in there with my mother, actually, this watch, and for my birthday. And my mother said, "What did you do with all that stuff in that store?" He said, "No one wants that stuff anymore." My mother said, "Well, I have all this stuff. I'd like to sell it." He says, "Ma'am, no one wants that stuff."
Wow, right?
And this is the guy who made millions
wow.
selling all this stuff
wow.
in the, you know, when the people first came from Europe. It wasn't just the
yeah.
Italians. And when you said that, it really really hit home.
Right. And your mother never even probably used it because she didn't want to break it.
No.
And it wasn't, right?
You just used it when the ladies came over for tea. It was really just very special. So it was just in the credenza. That's what it was.
Right.
It was just there for you to look at. And this is what I've acquired. And now it doesn't mean a thing, which is very sad because you're right. The work, the money, just the time to invest it in this. And now you're just putting it in boxes and shipping.
So Dina mentioned that she's from Canada, but her family's Italian.
They were from Calabria in southern Italy in a small village, and they immigrated to, of all places, Thunder Bay, Ontario, Canada, which is 4 hours north of Duluth, Minnesota, sort of northwest, I guess, or northeast of Duluth. It's right on Lake Superior. So that is quite a culture shock. And to go from olive groves and lemon trees to minus 40 Celsius and
mm-hmm.
moose, it's really quite and a small place.
And so I've known Dina happily for at least a decade or more, actually.
Mm-hmm.
When I first, I might have met you before I came to your show, but
yes.
the first show I saw was The Italian in Me.
Yes, that was at the Institute, I think.
And talk about culture shock. I watched you, and you presented some things very in a very funny way, but you're talking about this stuff and things a lot worse.
Yes, it's raunchy, I guess, in a way, but not. But it's like adult. You know what I mean? It's like real stuff
that happened to
yes,
you.
To me.
That because you went to Italy to be an actress.
Yes, I was working as an actress in Toronto. Then I came out to L.A. and I was an alien, so I couldn't work here. So I finished my studies and I went back to Canada. And I have an Italian passport, so I thought, well, I'll go to Italy. So I got to Italy, and that I started work. Well, it was obviously, you know, my show is about a girl struggling to work in cinema in Italy. So it wasn't like I landed and suddenly, you know, my career took off. But it was a struggle, and out of all of that, I wrote a very funny comedy, which now I laugh at and I go, oh, my gosh, that is so funny, all the stuff that happens to me. But at the time, it wasn't that funny. And I couldn't share my experiences with anybody in my family. I couldn't call my mother up and say, hey, you know what happened in this producer's office today? Well, everything was like buried. So I had to keep carrying this weight around. So it was really, it freed me a lot when I finally did the show. I took a lot of stuff out, but it really freed me a lot to be able to get up on stage and say, this is what happened. And a lot of, you know, this is completely how it happened. This is true. This happened. And but I was very nervous about putting it up. I still am, as I mentioned to you at one point, that I was very nervous about putting things up in front of my parents and relatives, because they're not from this world. They're not from the arts. They're not from entertainment. They've never been around it. They're farmers from Calabria,
yeah.
And very, you know, humble, modest people. They never knew what entertainment was. They didn't know anything. So to have this daughter who, you know, says, I'm going to be an actress, it was so foreign.
Well, so much of what you experienced, like now we're hearing stories being told. You've been telling some of these stories for a long time. So this producer wanted me to do this,
yes.
And this producer tried to do that.
Well, this is so funny because when I first did the show, I remember there was a lady in the front row. This was the Globe Playhouse where my show premiered. It's now called the Masha Theater. And a friend of mine from Toronto was sitting next to her, and everybody was standing ovation at the end. And these two little old ladies sitting in the front, the one turned to the other and said, I don't think there was a true thing in that story. And all of it was true.
Oh, wow.
Because it seemed so foreign 10 years ago
to
be talking about a girl who goes into an office and this happens and that happens. It was funny. It was comedic. Some people were put off. Some people thought it wasn't true.
Right.
This never happened. And
It was hard to take, too.
Well, it was hard to take because you go, well, if that really happened, then that was X, or if that, you know.
Yeah, that director that we like and
that
actor that we love, right?
Well, there's a piece in my show about Federico Fellini,
yeah.
And I don't think I can really give anything away, but Federico Fellini says something to me at the end of my piece with him, which is the centerpiece of the show.
And for those who don't know, he's one of Italy's most
famous
celebrated directors,
film directors, and he made movies that were a little bit, they were very artistic and they weren't the standard script, but they're, you know, Academy Awards movies, and he's really like a legend and an icon. And so when I had a chance to meet him in Rome at Cinecittà, he said something to me in a very, it was Federico Fellini giving me a compliment. And my director and his wife came to see the dress rehearsal. And it's a true story about what he said. And she said, oh. And it's very funny in the context of the show. She said, I think you should take that out because he would never say something like that.
Mm.
You know, it's really, people are going to be put off by it. And I said, no, he said that.
Mm.
It came out of his mouth. And it's very funny. And she was like, well, she was thinking about what are people going to think,
yeah.
That, you know, that you put up with it, that you were okay with it, or that you, you know. And I thought, well, this is my story. I've been telling it and I'm not going to hide. But you're absolutely right, Filippo. There are people that came up to me after every single show and said, so was any of that stuff true? Did that really happen? I'm thinking, what world do people live in?
It's denial. Some of the stuff you're such a brilliant writer and you've dealt with so much of it that you could talk about all these experiences and write them in a way that you could tell it and people laugh. But that doesn't mean it was, you know, like,
yes.
the Jews say, we laugh so not to cry.
Yes, exactly. And that is what I think. When I started writing it, it just got funnier and funnier because I started realizing how ridiculous. Some of this stuff
right.
is. And
right.
But it happens every day. And
still
I was
today.
Still today, I was able to, I'm able to laugh at it because I think I said no every step of the way. So it was like, I'm okay. Like I laughed about it and I plot, you know, and now I have material for a show. I don't know what the show would be. And there may not be a show if that didn't happen.
You did a lot of work to be able to process that way. But actually, when we come back, I'd like to talk about some of the things you said yes to.
Yes.
And then you did. Then you regretted. You're making me laugh. You're making me laugh. But
okay.
So we'll talk more with Dina Marone with this brilliant. This story is even more important today, mm-hmm. in a sense, because people weren't even able to hear it then, right? So
it didn't penetrate
at
all. They were just like, yeah, okay, that's a fantasy story.
And so here we are today, where it's real life, and it's very relevant. And then a little later on, live music with Jolo Piccolo, all on the Life Changes Show when we come back after this.
Listen to these words. He would not be beat by forces too fierce for man, woman, or beast. As the going got tougher, his courage increased. It's a little story with a big message, a message that speaks to children of all ages. It's about believing in yourself, overcoming obstacles, and never giving up. It's been called a masterpiece, one of the finest children's books ever written, and a true children's classic. Shadow Stevens has been called Dr. Seuss for the 21st century. His big little book, The Big Galoot, is a story about bullying. Bullying has become an American epidemic, and The Big Galoot talks about it in a way that will touch the heart of a child of four and a grandfather of 104. It's the story of a little boy with size 42 hands, the biggest hands anyone has ever seen, and the kids laugh at him, then the laughter turns mean. They mock him and trip him, and much worse. But throughout it all, Warren Galoot says, "I'm a galoot, but I have good luck. You can't get me down, I never give up." A second grader named Chandler said, "I thought it was the best funny book I have seen in my life," and we agree. Whoopi Goldberg said, "This is a great story. Bravo, Shadow." The Big Galoot is available now as an ebook exclusively on Kindle Fire on Amazon for only $3.98. We strongly urge you to get it for your children, your children's children, or as a gift to yourself. Its message speaks to all of us. Have good luck and never give up. Go to Amazon.com and search for The Big Galoot by Shadow Stevens.
You are listening to The Life Changes Show, recorded live from Studio NoHo. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as Dan Millman, The Green Children, Hot Rod Fuller, and Mike Marino, on our archive page at lifechangesshow.com. You can also follow us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We're back. I'm Filippo, sitting here with Mark and, of course, our guest, Dina Marone. And during the break, I was sharing with her that Mark is half Italian. And I have to say, the deck is stacked today with me and Mark and Dina. And joining us in the studio is our mutual friend, Maria Elena Infantino, who's been on the show before as a musical guest. And then our musical guest, Jolo Piccolo. And I have to say, this was not planned. It was so not planned. And it happened over a burnt pizza with Dina and
Late pizza.
A very late pizza, yes. In Beverly Hills. And another story for another time, because we've got other things to talk about. But so it wasn't planned, but here we are. It was meant to be. And so some of these experiences that you've said yes to, I don't know which one I want to ask you about. Do we start with the modeling one first, or do we start with the movie?
We start with the movie.
Okay.
Because that's, like, juicy.
Okay.
So just the whole cultural thing, the coming from, like, where you come from and how you're raised and your surrounding, you know, what surrounds you. So being raised the way I was, it was just this Italian family. Nobody was in the arts. And so to say to your parents, "I want to go into show business," was just so foreign. I remember, I never told you this yesterday, but I was a figure skater. And at one point, I wanted to audition for one of those ice shows. And my father said, "No daughter of his," and then he said some word, is going to be...
I know the word, because my dad said that to be about his son.
Yes, you know, you're not going to be a...
Yes, and, that's
you know,
the word.
That's the word. Because you're basically a life of the circus if you're in an ice show.
Yeah.
And the costumes are flashy and glittery and, you know, your legs are sticking out. So I signed up for modeling. And I'm not tall. I'm 5'4", but in my hometown, I was a model. So we did fashion shows in the malls and in different events, fundraisers. And one year, I didn't tell you this, but it ties into this. I went to New York with my fellow models, and when I got back, she said, "We're going to do this swimsuit show at the fair."
Oh no!
Yes. So I was so proud of myself, and this really is interesting because we have so many, body dysmorphia, or people, I'm fat, I'm overweight, as a girl growing up. So you should be proud of yourself if someone says, "I want you to model a swimsuit." Well, I said yes, and I went to the fashion show in the fair, and my mother came to see it, and I was in a bikini and a one-piece and everything, high heels. I was 16, and my mother said,
Makeup?
I'm modeling. And my mother said, if your father sees you, he's going to kill you in this thing. And I was like, oh, gosh. Like, how can I live like this? It's just, I can't do anything. So my father never saw me in that show. Then I was in Toronto and I entered a bikini contest. And
you're really pushing it.
Yeah. And this was like the first, Italian girl in my whole entire ancestry DNA that ever entered a bikini contest. And we had to parade through the downtown Toronto City Hall at 2 p.m. with balloons. It was like the whatever anniversary of the city. And I should have been proud that I was in this. And I was like, oh, if someone sees me, and then I found out I'm going to be on television, and if my relatives see me, my parents are going to, I'm in this thing. So no one saw me. Then I was telling you the story yesterday. I was, it was a big studio movie. It was a big American production with Rip Torn and Loretta Swit, big actors, and the other actor I mentioned yesterday, and I'm still blanking out on his name. Anyway, he's a big comedian now, and big comedic actor. They came to Toronto to shoot this movie, and my agent called me up, and he said, "Hey, you want to audition for this? It's a big movie. It's a big cast. They're looking for some girls, but they're also looking for two girls to go topless in this movie. Now, this is a big studio movie, so it's not anything that's going to be like, but it's still, you have to be topless in maybe an R-rated film." And I was young, and I was so excited that I was going to be working for these big studios. And the producers were the same people who produced Rocky. So Chartoff Winkler Productions. It was Bob Chartoff. It wasn't like, we're talking like a big studio. Mm-hmm. And so I went, and I did the audition, and I got it. And the good news was that I got the part. And the bad news was that I got the part. I didn't have to take off my top, which meant I was making a lot less money.
No.
So I was like, oh, good. I get to be in the scene with the other five girls, but I don't have to take off my top. But I'll still be in this big movie, and it'll be my first big movie. It'll be a big break. So I go to the set, and we're working with these five beautiful girls, and the actor was supposed to be, he made a lot of money doing some job, and now he was doing drugs and drinking, and he was partying. It was a very funny scene where all the girls sitting next to him had to say, oh, Frankie, you're so adorable. You're so beautiful. I love your eyes, Frankie. Oh, my God, I can't believe I'm sitting next to you. And you had to sound dumb and, whatever. And you have to talk fast. And the two girls they cast to do the following few days, the scenes, were the two girls sitting next to him.
They could
not sound dumb. No, nothing was coming out of their mouth. They were like, they just had no improv ability, but they looked great.
And they were the ones that were supposed to
They were the ones that, like, were going to continue on to take off their top in the next few days, and they were going to
make more money than you.
And make more money, work more days, and that was going to be my day, and then one day in a club. So we did it, take after take after take after take. The director was getting frustrated, and finally they said, okay, we're breaking for lunch, and the director came up to me, and he said, would you be willing to take off your top for this? And I said,
no. You said no, of course.
Well, of course I said no. No. So I said, I was so relieved I didn't have to. I said yes. We did the scene. We did it. It was fun, whatever. And then I worked, I made all this money, so much money on this movie. And then being raised the way I was and with my parents, I just thought, I hope this movie never comes out. Because if it does, my dad's going to kill me. What's going to happen? My
because
relative.
You did take off.
Yeah, it was one quick scene. It wasn't anything. It was like the next scene was like, oh, the girls are ripping off their tops, and then that's it. They go under the sheets. You don't see anything. And cut.
And we're talking about, you know, let's not lose the perspective. We're talking about your body.
Yeah,
this is the body you were born with. Yeah. God gave you this body.
And my
body.
Career, too. We're talking about body and career, and it's like...
And how you feel about yourself and your...
Good enough to say, I'll do it.
Yeah.
It's not like I was the most secure person, you know, to ever do this. I had bulimia. Like, I had very bad bulimia. So for me to be there going, yeah, I'll do this. I mean, they had no idea. But to then, it's like you go one, you know, 5 steps forward and then, you know, 4 steps back. Because now you don't want this movie to come out.
Well, you're now so you're powerful.
That the movie, thank you, Filippo, that the movie did not come out.
And what actress wishes that their big movie doesn't come out?
Yeah, it was such a, it was
That's
not.
That's how.
Yeah, it came out on cassette and now cassette, it's online.
What's that?
It was on cassette, like it came out on VHS, you know, but now it's actually, you can see it online, I think.
Oh, somewhere. Really?
I think you can. Oh,
do we want to know the name?
No,
of it?
You don't, because the scenes are cut out of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
After all of that.
But remember, you know, I didn't know anybody that was connected or anything. So I didn't know if the scenes were cut out, if the scenes were in. All I thought was, if this goes to the movie theaters and my dad sees it. And so instead of wishing yourself all that positive energy and just, you know, sending it, you know, forward. No, it's like, I hope this never comes out.
So this is one of those things where you're pushing the envelope with what is comfortable.
Yeah.
And then you're like trying to bring it back or trying to say, you know, I hope this doesn't happen. And this has been a theme.
Yeah.
Because there was a modeling thing and there was
with Alain Delon that I was telling you about. They called me up and they said, okay, you did this movie with Alain Delon. We want to do a thing for Gente, is an Italian magazine.
A huge Italian magazine.
Yeah, huge magazine. Yeah. They're like,
it's like people.
It's like people.
It is people, actually.
It is kind of like people. It's Gente. Oh, my God. It's people. People are people. And so the same thing. The guy called me up. He said, you did a movie with Alain Delon. We got your name. We want to do a photo shoot. I said, great. So we went and did this photo shoot. But what you... In Italy, all these actresses are so comfortable, you know, with their top off, they're at the beach, their thing, it's no big deal. So,
but this is a great point because your parents didn't stay in Italy, they went to Toronto.
They went to Thunder Bay.
So,
yeah.
Which is not Toronto, it's
exactly.
Thunder Bay.
Yeah, it's Thunder
Bay. So, even more remote. So they kept the traditions, but Italy moved on.
Yes. And so when you, with not just with my family, but with the whole immigration thing, that's basically what happens is that you leave your country and you leave it, you take with you what you know.
And you hold on.
You hold on to it and you're there and you're like, these are our traditions. This is what we know. And so you're left in this place of whatever year it was you left.
Right.
And you move into this new culture. You're learning this new way of life, but you're holding on to that. From before, and you're sending this off to your children. And I know in Moose on the Loose, I was telling you, you saw Moose on the Loose.
I did.
It's a comedy about an Italian family and a Canadian moose.
That Dina Moroni wrote.
Yeah, and I wrote it. And it's about...
Very funny.
It's about change. And it is, there is this one monologue where they say, look, you know, we're just trying to hold on to whatever we know, our customs, our traditions, our plates, whatever, you know, and trying to pass this on to our children so that they will hold on to a little piece of us when we're no longer here. Mm-hmm. And then they can pass it on to the generations. And the one thing the grandfather says in the piece is that, you know, money can buy you shoes and cars, but the stories we leave behind are worth so much more than money.
Mm.
And so that is about the tradition. So I try to hold on to that tradition and who my parents were, what they came to Canada with. But I have my own life to live, like we all do. And we're trying to be that other person so badly. And we can't. We open the door, we step out, we go, oh, okay, it's cold, I'm going to go back in. And then you open the door and...
Well, actually, really quickly, you did the photo shoot. What you did with it, you made me laugh so hard.
I did the photo shoot and the photographer said, can you just like pull your blouse open a little bit? You know, we're on the beach and, you know, I had a plaid shirt or whatever and we did one on the horse. And they printed in the magazine a beautiful piece about me with pictures with Alain Delon, and I was giving birth in one of the scenes. So
I was a big French actor.
And So I do this the whole beautiful thing. And then they put one little picture of me with a plaid shirt on and like one of my breasts is sticking out. It was no big deal. And, you know, and it was like I had pants on, jeans, and it was just like a whatever. So, of course, I couldn't tell anybody I did this. And so when I had to apply for immigration, they wanted all my paperwork and anything I've done, any press. And I took this thing. I'm like, my lawyer goes, oh, you can't submit that. So I colored in the breast in black marker, like as if it was a bathing suit. And then I never told my family about it. And then my mother was in Italy visiting my aunt in Calabria. And my aunt said, look. She brings my mother to the bedroom.
She goes, she couldn't wait,
She couldn't
you.
Wait. She goes, look. And my mother said, what? She goes, look what I got at the hair salon. And it was this magazine. She goes, look, look. And my mother goes, so my mother took it and brought it to Canada. And I'm like, she goes, look what your aunt showed me when I went. I go, yeah. She goes, oh, you know, la vergogna.
La vergogna, whatever, you know, la brutta figura.
La brutta figura that we talked about, you know. Look, I said, Mom. You love this Italian actress. I'm not going to say any names. You love this Italian actress. They all have been naked in movies. They've all done Italian movies.
Yeah. Or they've been photo in gente. They've been photographed on the beach.
They tan topless on the beach. They call the photographers to say the paparazzi come. I'm on the beach with my thong. So my mother is like, hey, and then she goes, you're right. She goes, okay, but just don't show anybody.
She said, you're right.
Yeah, she says, you're right, but don't show anybody. So it's in a drawer somewhere. Yeah. I don't know, in her house.
But... You brought it today, right?
No.
No, because we're proud of you. Whatever it is that you're feeling, so you're still processing, as we can see.
Yeah, exactly.
But the beauty of you and how you're processing through your plays and through your writing is that you're helping other people process too.
Yes.
And feel comfortable being able to share their stories, especially when you do it with so much humor. And like I said, you had me laughing at the same time, cringing at the same time because of the way you tell your stories. Dina, we'll have a couple more minutes when we come back with Dina, but if you want to learn more about her plays, you can go to dinamorrone.com, Dina, D-I-N-A, and Morrone, M-O-R-R-O-N-E.com. So we'll be back with Dina for just a little bit when we come back. We're also going to have our Ask Dorothy segment at that time, and then live music here in the studio with Joe Lopiccolo when we come back on the Life Changes Show.
The Little Dog That Could is the fantastically true story of a man and a little dog that came into his life as his mentor to help him understand the world beyond his human senses and to experience life, love, and healing beyond his human understanding. Best-selling author Filippo Voltaggio, who currently hosts the highly regarded Life Changes show, is an internationally known singer, speaker, and life coach. Filippo offers up his own story, how one little surprise package in fur and four legs transformed his life unexpectedly forever and furthered his path of self-discovery. In The Little Dog That Could, Filippo brings to life the meaning of the adage, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Through the reading of this book, you will experience the journey of real miracles that transcend time, space, and logic while gaining practical tools that will help you navigate your way. The Little Dog That Could is available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. For more information, visit thelittledogthatcould.com. That's thelittledogthatcould.com.
You are listening to The Life Changes Show, recorded live from Studio NoHo. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as Mariel Hemingway, Shadow Stevens, Barbara Morrison, and Kyle Cease at our archive on our website at lifechangesshow.com. You can also follow us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We are back. I am Filippo, sitting here with Mark and our guest Dina Morrone. There's so much we could talk about with you, and that's because you explore so many. Actually, you do so many things. I just saw you on the cover of a magazine. Was it
Eden magazine?
The Eden magazine. I saw you on the cover. Actually, there's an article about you that's really wonderful. I know you write for them as well, but you won something that I saw.
The Valley Theater Award. It's a Valley Theater Award for all theater in the Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And I won a best one person show. It was male and female in one category, five of us. And it was really a thrill. It was for The Italian in Me. And it was produced and performed at Theater West last year.
I have to ask you, were you able to celebrate it, like tell everybody, hey, look what I won?
No, because the day that I won the award, I wasn't feeling good. And so I put it on Facebook, and then I never celebrated to this day.
I think this is a pattern for you.
Yeah, so
celebrate.
Maybe this is a new beginning.
We celebrate you. And actually, so tell us a little bit more, because
I love the whole theater. My theater that I'm a member of is Theater West, and
I have to say before you mention that, because you do all this voiceover work.
Oh, I also
for
do voiceover.
So
yes.
much. I mean, and you do acting in all kinds of movies and TV and all that stuff. But theater, you're really...
I love the live audience.
Yeah.
And I think as a singer, you can appreciate it. Yeah. I just love people hearing stories. I love storytelling. But I my stories are, there's always humor, but you could also spin it and cry if you wanted to. But they're funny.
Yeah.
And I always find a little bit of, I find them very, my stuff is very adult.
Yeah.
You know, like you can always find the double meaning in anything that I say.
Mm-hmm. And people walk away with having learned something not only about you, but about themselves.
About themselves.
Life.
And I just bring it down to so everybody can really feel that it was their story or that they were a part of it. And that's what I love. So the voiceover is very rewarding. And, you know, it's also a form of acting.
Yeah.
And but I really love being on the stage, and I love writing my stories. There's not enough time to write all the plays. I just did a play there, 10-minute play called Mausoleum, about an old Italian man and an old Italian woman that meet in the mausoleum.
I didn't know this.
Yeah, I just did it. It was very funny because she's there to see her husband. He's there to see his wife.
I would have come. You have to let me know,
yeah.
and we can share with others, so we can celebrate and experience through your eyes, like the moose on the loose. I laugh so hard sometimes. Anyway,
it's family.
We have to, yeah, and
it's
very family too. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a thrill.
This was so great, and thank you for bringing the conversations to the fold that are so important today. And I look forward to seeing not only the play again, especially The Italian in Me, but I'd like to see that into a book, I'm just saying. So Dina Morrone, DinaMorrone.com. Grazie.
Grazie.
And with that, we have our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, my name is Anna, and I live in Los Angeles. I have taken your workshop a couple of times, and it has really changed my life for the better. However, I have recently been diagnosed with breast cancer, and after speaking with several doctors and with my family, I am frightened about my future and very confused about what to do. I believe in my ability to heal myself, and yet I have been told by my family that I need to have a mastectomy and start chemo right away. This doesn't feel right, as my family is pressuring me to have an operation immediately when there hasn't even been a biopsy yet. They just can't hear me when I try to talk to them about what I want. They just cry and tell me that I must do it their way. I love my family and don't want them to be angry with me. How can I get them to understand that I believe in alternative therapies and want to explore other options rather than chemo and surgery?
My dear Anna, unfortunately, when the word cancer is mentioned, people go into fear, and this appears to be what is going on with your family. Most people believe that they know what is the best course of action due to their limited knowledge of the subject. Since you are an energetic alchemist and a Reiki master, you have a more extensive knowledge of the fact that there are many choices we can make when one experiences dis-ease. Your family hasn't opened themselves up to this kind of thinking and knowing and believing, so the fact is that they simply may not be capable of understanding all of the other options. The most important thing to remember here is that your family loves you, and not having studied the things you've studied, they only know what they have learned. So it may be impossible for you to convince them otherwise. I believe the best course of action here is for you to thank them for their concern and ask for their support in allowing you to explore the alternative options available to you. After you've done your research and you find a plan you believe will work best for you, you can then share with your family what you wish to do. One way to help them understand is to recommend that they read the books that have assisted you in making the best choices possible. They may or may not wish to do so. However, what's important here is for you to stand strong and do what you feel is in your highest and best good. You can always stop the conversations with your family over this issue if they continue to need to advise you to do things you do not want to do. I have found that when things come up in my life that I want to talk to others about, I choose my audience carefully from the people who are at least on the same page with me when the important issues are discussed. They may or may not always agree with my choices, but because they have similar knowledge about the issues, I know they will give me an honest evaluation of my situation, and I'm always open to receiving new information. Let's find a way for you to love yourself enough to make the most elegant choices in the future as to who you share important information with.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com.
And with that, we are going to be having our musical guest join us here in the studio in just a moment, Joe Lopiccolo, all on the Life Changes Show when we come back after this.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening. Someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
The Life Changes Show is a premier radio show presented by the Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people, celebrities, corporate giants, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart, integrity, and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your lives through the Life Changes Show, LifeChangesNetwork.com, and through guest appearances on other inspiring shows and events. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching, a private consultation with one of us, corporate or live event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, please email us at info@lifechangesnetwork.com.
And we're back. I'm Filippo, sitting here with Mark, and of course our guest Dina Morrone. And joining us in the studio is a composer, a guitarist, he's an educator, and so much more. Joe Lopiccolo, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure having you here. And if I'm not mistaken, it was Mark Sanfilippo that introduced us.
Yes.
So a shout out and a thank you to Mark. I mentioned we're going to get to talk about your music here in a little bit, but I mentioned you're an educator. You're not just an educator. You've actually written textbooks, right? A couple of them.
Yeah, a couple of them. I'm faculty at Mount San Antonio College in Walnut, right by Cal Poly Pomona, and then up the five. College of the Canyons, which is right by my alma mater, CalArts. And so I've written a couple books, and the first piece I'm going to play is from my kind of general guitar method book, and it's a piece that I wrote about the accidental note, so it's called Accidental Blues. And some of these pieces that I write didn't intend to necessarily become part of my own performing repertoire, but as you know, of course, sometimes when you're a teacher, one of the best things is when you can learn from teaching and kind of take some of those things, the inspiration from the students to your own craft as well. So this is
Well, the piece we're going to hear is accidental, but music for you was no accident at all. You were saying earlier you got goosebumps when you were a kid.
Yeah, at a really young age, yeah. For some reason, it just moved me like nothing else in life. Literally at 9 or 10 years old, I was getting goosebumps on my arm from listening to different music. And at that point, I don't think I really connected the dots saying this is what I want to do with my life, but I never really thought about doing anything else, and I never have. So it was just pretty clear to me the path and the connection.
And it's interesting, I know you play all kinds of music, but isn't it mainly like classical oriented or jazz oriented, maybe a little world?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say so, and that's what attracted me to CalArts was that kind of openness they have there between those three genres in particular, classical, jazz, and world. And world, of course, is like a bazillion universe, you know, it's a universe with many galaxies, and they've all pulled me, but I don't play just exclusively classical. It's kind of interesting for me straddling genres in that a lot of people in the classical world really think of me as just a jazz guy in L.A., and my jazz friends think of me as a classical guy, so it's kind of hard to get that, but there's I'm kind of one of those, the fewer people in town that really can somewhat straddle both of those genres. So I play electric as well, and I love that, and I just have been kind of pulled in between all those different facets
classical.
Of music.
Classical.
Classical, classical.
Nice. A whole new genre.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, actually, the thing that I thought was funny is that the music that gave you goosebumps was completely different.
Yeah, but exactly.
Who
but
was
I still
it?
Love, I mean, in particular, it was Hendrix, and I came in through Hendrix and Led Zeppelin and Kiss.
Right.
And I still love that music, even though I don't play it. But what I play today is not necessarily reflective of. I still do gig regularly with singers where I play blues or jazz or funk or soul or even some classic rock stuff. But yeah, a lot of people have said that before. The songs I pull up and I'm listening to could be Metallica or Ronnie James Dio or Led Zeppelin or any of those, and then we might play Brazilian and Bossa Nova all night long and things like that. So,
you know, speaking of Brazilian and Bossa Nova, don't you have a funny story about playing a gig or something with somebody that was playing? Was it he was playing the bongos or something?
Yeah, I think I mentioned earlier, I had been asked by Rivers Cuomo, who's from the band Weezer, to do something for Sirius, and it was very, very last minute, Sirius Radio, and it was very last minute, and so I, you know, took it really seriously because he's kind of a superstar, and I worked really, really hard on an arrangement of one of his songs that they gave me a choice, and then also on a cover, What If God Was One of Us. Mm. And then in the middle of this recording, someone walked in that just kind of looked like... if I can be unflattering, I don't know if you remember Seinfeld, the hipster doofus kind of a guy walked in looking like this and just kind of said, oh, do you mind if I play bongos? And I had no clue who he was.
And you're inside, you're like, no, I worked hard on
exactly.
This.
Exactly. Yeah, I was just a little scared about, you know, had really.
Who is this guy?
Yeah. And so there's a couple takeaways from this because after the session was over, Rivers was like, you know who that is, right? And I said, no, I have no idea. And it was Rainn Wilson from The Office and, who had a great spiritual podcast as well called Soul Pancake. And so I think the message is two things. One, as you mentioned, you never know who you're talking to in LA, but on a deeper level, to really trust in that, you know, your own skills and your own abilities, because, you know, to not.
And the moment, because that was a moment that was happening.
And he played well, actually. So it was kind of, a lesson, a nice takeaway from that,
Nice.
Let things flow.
Okay, so the first piece, actually, let's jump right in, actually.
Sure.
Here is Joe Lo Piccolo performing live here at Studio NoHo on the Life Changes Show, his original piece, Accidental Blues. Thank you. Nice. Wow.
Thank you.
Wow. Now we know exactly what writer Dan O'Heron of the Pasadena Weekly was saying when he said his music is soft-spoken eloquence, fascinatingly improvised. Bravo. Grazie, Joe Lo Piccolo. If you want to learn more about Joe or get his music or see him perform or study with him, joelopiccolo.com. J-O-O-E. Lopiccolo, LOPICCOLO.com. Joe, that name sounds very Italian. although you actually weren't raised very Italian, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think a lot of later generation Italians, which I kind of call Italian Americans. Mm-hmm.
You're not the only one, by
the way. Right, right,
right.
A lot
of people call them
Italians. A lot of people.
And Italian Canadians.
Exactly, yeah. But a lot of people who were, you know, have an Italian last name, say, I'm Italian. And then they meet an Italian person, and they're like, they start speaking to them in Italian, or and they know nothing.
We're nothing like that.
I'm not being, yeah, and I'm not trying to be demeaning, but they've developed into two separate cultures. But what I do get a lot about my last name is it really my last name? Because people just think it's like a musical last name, maybe because of the piccolo flute. People think I chose that. Mm. I don't know why I would have ever picked that. But yeah, it's a Sicilian name. And it has some mafia connotations. And I've also heard a lot of street vendors in Palermo have the last name Lo Piccolo. Yeah. And then some mafia bosses as well. So,
okay. So the gamut.
food and mafia.
But you actually speak Italian.
Yeah. Not as a mother language, but it's something over maybe the past 8 or 9 years I've really found enjoyable and super meaningful for me and stimulating as well. Yeah. To learn Italian.
So it's funny because when you and I were talking on the phone a couple times, it was all in Italian. When Dina and I were speaking on the phone, it was all in Italian. And then we come in here and we're just speaking English, and as it should be. But one of the interesting things that you were telling me, see, now I grew up as a singer. I grew up with Italian music. So when I sang Italian music, I sang it a little bit with some of what I remembered, or some of part of how I'd heard it. But you are doing Italian music now, but all in a completely different way. How do you describe that?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess the easiest way is the name of this project that I have in mind that I've been working on for the past few years, which is called the Italian Project with a big L and a big A. I know it sounds kind of cheesy, but what it means is that I'm taking some of these classic songs that some younger people in Italy.
Oh, as in L.A., Los
yes,
Angeles?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, okay.
Exactly, exactly, exactly. And I think, you know, when I do the CD, I want to have some kind of L.A. skyline and have that L.A. kind of in there somehow. Because what I'm trying to do is take some of these classic Italian songs, some more contemporary songs, some film scores, but some of the ones that the younger people in Italy may have never even heard or be sick of, you know, and try to bring them through, not just to give them a new life, but really the life that I feel capable and authentic to imbue these with, which is through the perspective of the Los Angeles musical culture. Mm. And an analogy that came to me recently, unfortunately, after the death of Jonathan Gold and having seen his documentary and going to see him speak a couple times live, you know, he was kind of the champion of Los Angeles and the diaspora of all the different cultures and the food. And he went, you know, it struck me how he said, LA's culture is not downtown. It's in these kind of these pockets of ethnicity we have. And I thought about all the musical richness that we have here as well. And just me being into that, as you mentioned, world music and, you know, knowing Brazilian music and playing with a lot of guys. Like every Wednesday I play at Casa del Mar and it's a Spanish nights, but I've been hiring a lot of guys from South America and it's so wonderful to learn things from them. And so I'm taking these Italian songs and playing these classic Neapolitan songs as a cha-cha, as a mambo, as a samba, you know, as a free jazz piece, as an odd time signature, as just trying to do that and not as a contrivance, but because that's what feels right to me. And I have played these in Italy and I have had a good reaction. You know, when you first say I'm going to play O Sole Mio, some younger Italian kids might groan and be like, please, no. Mm. But then I really feel like it's almost become an original composition when I infuse it with my improvisation and the way I've reharmonized things. And so that's the idea. Sorry.
Well, for the CD's not complete yet, but we're going to get to hear you do a live version of one of the tracks, right?
Yeah, this is, I was going to just do O Sole Mio. And I actually have this already recorded with a wonderful singer from Italy named Barbara Eremo, who, you know, was up at San Remo many years ago. She's a wonderful singer. And she was in town just visiting me years ago, and I was like, my God, we have to record something. So we just went into the studio with a quartet, and we did this and a song by Carmen Consoli called L'Ultimo Bacio. Mm. And but that one I don't do solo as of yet. So I'll play O Sole Mio. If you
awesome.
Like.
Well, here is Joe Lopiccolo performing O Sole Mio live on the Life Changes show here at Studio NoHo.
Thank you.
I want that CD.
Beautiful.
Oh, you'll get one.
I so want that.
You'll get one.
Maria Elena, I'm looking at you, and she's like,
she's cheering.
She's like, I want to sing that song. I know her, right? Like, she's nodding her head. Wow. Joe Lopiccolo, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
How great was that? Awesome. And how perfect today. JoeLopiccolo.com. Just Joe, LOPICCOLO.com. Did you pick that name?
Exactly. No,
all right. So that's our show. What a show. Thank you so much, Joe. And thank you, Dina Morone. What a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And with that, first off, let's thank Brent Hahn. on here at Studio NoHo for making us all sound so great.
Thank you, Brent.
And on behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Donahue, and our producer, Mark Lejeur, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.